We'd like to take a second to thank our sponsor, Mouser Electronics. Not only does Mouser stock the world's widest selection of semiconductors and electronic components, they also offer an original content series called Empowering Innovation Together. Each month, EIT takes a deep dive into the hottest tech trends, and this month, the focus is on intelligent transportation systems. Check out podcasts, articles, infographics, videos, and more at mouser.com/empowering-innovation.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Reviews Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, it's all about Amazon, specifically that Amazon robot, which I don't know if I should trust or destroy. I don't know if you've got any further thoughts on that, Sherlyn, like immediate thoughts, one sentence slot on the robot.
Kind of cute, but not very.
And it has a camera and it patrols your home. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the Engadget Podcast, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. That's always super helpful. And drop us an email. We're at podcast@engadget.com. We also typically do a live stream of the episodes Thursdays around 10 a.m. Eastern. You can find us on the Engadget YouTube channel. You can chat with us live. You can ask us some questions. It's a pretty fun time. Let's talk about this Amazon event, though, Sherlyn, because it is funny how, like, every year Amazon kind of follows what Apple does and kind of what Google does, and even after Microsoft's events. And Amazon's is, like, the least organic of them all, like, in terms of hosting and the products. The executive they brought out this year, I forget if he was in there in previous years, but he gives me very strong Forrest McNeil energy
from
Comedy Central's review. Pretty much the same look, too. So I had a hard time taking him seriously.
Oh, man.
And at the end of the day, it's like stuff you would expect from Amazon, right? And you had a great piece where basically the big thing Amazon does is just make the stuff other people are doing, copy other people, and do it cheaper. You know, like that is the overall broad theme.
Yep.
Go check out that piece from Sherlyn. We'll dive into some of that. And then there are the like outlier things Amazon does, like the big long shot stuff. And I think the biggest one this year is the robot, the Astro robot, which is a home security, home companion robot. It has cameras. It can move around your home. It does all this weird stuff, too, because it's like, first of all, it's kind of cute. Looks like an 80s robot.
Sort of. It
has a screen, it has eyes and a face. And this is the exact danger of any robot like this, by the way, because it's like, oh, it's cute. So it's so cute. You don't realize like when, you know, if you go to somebody's home and they have one of these roaming around, you don't realize like your rights are being kind of like stripped away, because these things are you could put them in a mode where it follows new people in your house. It will like collect information about them, and like if they do anything weird, it'll alert you. It's like a little dog that'll also like just spy on new people in your home.
I missed this part of the announcement. I think I was writing up my other pose, and I completely missed this part. And I see why now. It's completely creepy. I'm sorry.
It's just a camera on wheels. Yeah, it's super creepy. And that's the thing. Like, what else does it do other than be cute and be a camera? It has a like this telescopic rod that kind of extends up and gives you like a camera view higher up too. So if like you don't know if you left your stove on or something, you could like pop up and see the knobs or the actual burners. But at the end of the day, it is just like it is a moving camera on wheels that can patrol your home and spy on people in your home. It just looks cute. It doesn't have much of a purpose right now.
Yeah, I'll say that like there's been devices that do this. There's a lot of robots that can follow you around. I've seen some demoed. Timmy, the personal robot, at least 3 years ago, also had Alexa built in. It was taller. It definitely did follow me around the
Has
demo
it been
area.
Released? Is this thing
like I've seen $1,000? It's more than actually it's $1,000 to $2,000, right? I mean, to be fair, Amazon's not yet releasing its thing either. I'm just saying the concept isn't new, but what Amazon is doing here with what you're saying, if it's really monitoring people's behavior and then flagging when something seems out of the ordinary, that is definitely not something I've seen done before. And
it's kind
weird.
Of funny. And I think, it's like, maybe for home security, it could be kind of good. Or at least for people who are really, really, like, paranoid about what's going on in their homes. Like, it could patrol your home. If it sees somebody, if it sees something, it can alert you. It ties into, I believe, the Ring, the new, like, Ring Protect plans and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, it is just a moving camera. You can attach, like, this, you can attach a cup holder to the back of it. So,
I mean, that's the only thing I would use this for, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, snack. This is my snack machine. That's it. Astro, bring me my popcorn. Right. And then constantly have like, Astro, bring me dim sum. And then like if it were a built-in microwave or something, like in its little chest cavity, be like, popping your popcorn. Oh no, cuter voice, popping your popping your popcorn now and then bringing it to you.
You just want to go straight into the like WALL-E future where you're just like laying down all the time and things get delivered to you. I'm sure we're going to get there. That is where our robots are going to take us eventually. But this guy is not that. It is just wheels and a camera, and it follows you around. It has kind of a cute display. There was actually some fun reporting from Vice, and I believe mainly Vice, where people who used to work on this thing from Amazon were like, this thing is a disaster. It will throw itself downstairs, you know, like willy-nilly. Like, it doesn't really have good safety mechanisms. It breaks all the time. That telescopic camera is really, like, fragile. So a lot of people are saying this thing isn't ready for release. But
Ryan Watson in our chat said that they would have bought it if Amazon had made it a vacuum. And I was thinking the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't mind a robot in the house, but I wanted to do more than just, like, follow me around, look at things. If it were a robot vacuum that had all these extra built-in features, I would. Get that thing. Yeah.
I was honestly surprised. Like, I was expecting iRobot, you know, the Roomba company, to do something like this first, because they have put robots in people's homes for 20 years, right? Like, for two decades, and mainly because they're cute little vacuums.
They're frustrating. They don't poop anymore, yeah.
Yeah, they don't. Well, that's what they say, or they'll replace it. But I could eventually see, like, a Roomba with a screen on it or something that was a little more smart and could patrol and do other things. Exactly. And I'm sure they will get there. It's just like sometimes Amazon takes those leaps where they jump ahead of everybody else, and even they don't, like, it's a clear moonshot. They don't know if it's going to pay off. I think the original Kindle was pretty much like that, too. That's one of those things, like, the myth around Jeff Bezos is that he makes some of these, and some of those things fail, like the Fire Phone. And some of them, like the Kindle, which sort of, like, transformed the way we expected to read, because e-readers existed before, but the centralized platform to buy books and everything wasn't a thing. And even then, Kindles aren't like, they're not like iPads, right? Not everybody has them. They're not the biggest thing in the world anymore. But it was big enough to make Amazon, like, pretty important at that time. Mm-hmm. He also had, like, the idea to do, hey, people need server stuff. Let's just build big server farms so AWS, people can do cloud stuff. And AWS became, like, a huge, huge hit, too. And nobody expected that from a company that sold books online, you know? So they occasionally make these shots. I don't know. This thing is going to be, I think it's up for pre-order for $1,000. Eventually, it's going to be jumping up to $1,450. It's essentially a beta. You're paying this money to be a beta tester for this thing. I would warn people that this seems like a very, very bad idea. You know, like, you don't pay to be a beta tester. They should be handing these things out for people to test. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's been the way Amazon's done a lot of its releases for a while, right? Like with the original Echo, I think it was invite only for the longest time. The
For Prime the subscribers, new things,
yeah, and then the new things that they always roll out, like the Amazon Frames, the Echo Frames, took a while to become non-invite only. The Halo Band was invite only. The Echo Look was invite only. Speaking of things that were invite only. The Amazon Ring, I forget what the name is, but they had made a ring, and it just never got released. It was so-called invite-only. It still hasn't been released. They announced the ring,
yeah.
Yeah, and so this could be one of those things where it's been announced, and then it just never comes to market. Or we have to wait forever for them to figure out how to make it stop throwing itself down the stairs. I thought that was so funny.
They did bring back the home security drone. Was something they announced, I think, last year. We were like, I don't know if this is ever going to exist. I don't know if they're ever actually going to release
it. It's kind of cool,
It's, I mean, again, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, you they say soon, maybe you'll be able to test it soon. We don't quite know enough about it. And I have the same reservations about that as I do the robot, you know, like unless you're a scientist who has like really, or, you know, a government official who has confidential data, highly classified data in their homes. The idea of having like a sentry drone seems overkill for most people. But I guess we'll see. It just it sounds horrifying to me. Mm-hmm. You were really interested in something that they announced, though, Sherlyn, which is basically just a bigger Echo Show. Like all that they put, they made a bigger Echo Show. It has a 15-inch screen. That's it.
It looks good, though. You know what I mean? Like I'm in the market for art. I've been shopping for the longest time for art, and I don't like art that's not personal. Even though the aesthetic is really nice, this is the sort of frame that I like, right? The little like black border with the white mat and the screen in the middle.
The, the most basic of frames, by
very
the way.
Basic like, frame. Yeah, I'm basic as it. Like, I don't like the gold embossed. Like carved out sort of style. I don't, it's too much for me. I like this basic look. But I just thought it was funny because that was when I first started thinking Amazon's ripping everyone off, aren't they? Because the interface that they introduced with the Echo Show 15.2, I was just like, that is Google's smart display interface. That's exactly it. Excuse me. But no, I mean, the smart display looks good. With the new software, well, the updated software, you can do things like leave notes for your family members. You can see your upcoming events. You can see the weather. You can watch videos. So, I mean, it's useful. And I, you know what? We like mock it, but I can tell you that there's going to be a lot of people who live in like big households that will find it useful, and they might just buy it because like it's one spot on the wall where like everyone can go to look at like their upcoming chores or like reminders. I don't know. I mean, hopefully Google makes a better version of it, but then, there, you know.
Yeah, I don't know if you need a display for that. Like, typically those things, it's like for a big, big family, right? It is a calendar on the wall. It has a lot of notes on it, scribbled on. And it's like a big, highly interactive thing. I don't know if a single smart display can kind of replace that for people. But, hey, it could be cool. This was inevitable because basically first came the Echo, then came the Echoes with screens, and they just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And you can't have a 15-inch screen just sitting on your kitchen countertop. So they had to make it something like this that you hang on the wall and is basically a kitchen TV and sort of like a feature display that you'd expect to see on like Back to the Future or something, right? Like from a sci-fi movie. It's a cool idea, but again, like I don't trust Amazon enough for this stuff. And here's the thing. I have Echo devices. I have Alexa devices in my home. I use Echo quite a bit. I use the Alexa voice assistant quite often. It's just they make these leaps into things where I don't fully buy into everything. And we don't have to. You can pick and choose what you need from all these companies. But you're down with this, Sherlyn. I'm glad about that. It's only $250 too, so it's not that expensive.
I'm not getting it for myself for the one very simple reason it's wall mounted. I don't do wall mounting anything, so it just looks nice. Great.
It looks very nice. It's fine. They also unveiled a new fitness band, which I'm sure you're very excited about. It's your favorite thing in the world.
I was like, this is what I had to write up for the event, and I was like, what wearable could they announce? A Bloomberg report before the event was like, oh, they have some sort of kid-centric wearable or for seniors. I was like, okay, nope, it's a new Halo, our favorite Amazon wearable, the Halo, which was originally a fitness band that had no screen, that had microphones on board to detect your voice and tell you, hey,
it was
chill out.
The tone policing band.
Yeah, the feature was even called Tone. What happened was Amazon just said it took Halo and added a screen to it, but it didn't tell you during the event that it took away the microphones. It does not have microphones on this thing, the thing called Halo View. So with the screen, you can view it, haha. And it will do some pretty basic things. It'll do like steps tracking, heart rate monitoring. And with heart rate, it can do your blood oxygen. You can get some text notifications. Here's my thing. I don't know how much like I can say about this, but Amazon will, I guess, say that it does a lot of things, but it doesn't do that many things, especially when you compare it to what this thing looks the most like, which is The Fitbit Charge 5. If you look at the Fitbit Charge 5, it's the exact same aesthetic. I'm sorry. It's like a rectangular screen on a strap, which, to be fair, is most fitness trackers. You can't put a screen on a strap in many different ways. But this, even down to the OS, looks like they ripped the freak off of Fitbit OS. I'm sorry. Like,
yeah,
just,
yeah.
I can't. If you've ever used
Fitbit.
This is what
Amazon does. This is their yes. thing. Yeah.
And mm-hmm. this thing's going to cost like $80. And then you have to pay like $4 a month for the Halo subscription to use some of the other features in the app. Like tone is part of it, body composition, sleep insight, sleep score, that sort of thing. All are locked under that $4 a month fee. Which is very similar to what Fitbit does on its Charge and other devices, but Fitbit Charge costs like more. I think I can't remember the offhand what the Fitbit Charge goes for, the Charge 5, but more than $100. And then the Fitbit Premium subscription starts at $10 a month. So what Amazon has done here is basically like, hey, you like the Fitbit Charge 5? You like the exact look, the exact OS, but you don't want to pay like $100 and then $10 a month for it. Here, take ours. Ours is like $4 a month yeah. and then like just $70, $80. So
it's just funny to see Amazon keep doing this, like essentially release copycat products, which, hey, a lot of the tech industry does this too. But we've talked about this before where Amazon is in like a very unique position, right? Like they have the data of stuff people are buying and even the stuff people aren't buying, the stuff people may put in a wish list or save in their cart and like hover around and they see like what's potentially popular and they can be like, okay, if we can make the same device and make it half the price, you know, and essentially do the same thing, we could just scoop up all these users. And Amazon does this over and over again. That's
yeah.
part of like the big antitrust argument against them too. They are both a store and the biggest online store and the producer of products, and it gets a little wonky. Your piece, Sherlyn, I think is really good because it gets into the fact that, yeah, they just exist to make certain things cheaper. That even is true. They showed off something called the Amazon Glow, which is an interactive kid tablet. It is like a tablet that stands up in portrait mode. You can video chat with your grandparents, but there's also like this thing at the top, which creates a holographic display that's like touch interactive on a table or something. And I've seen this tech before in a couple of things, and there are actually other kids products already. You had brought up one, Sherlyn.
The Osmo, yeah.
The Osmo, which I know among parents like is something a lot of people are interested in. If you go look at Amazon, the Amazon listings for the Osmo, really, really popular, like really high reviews.
Yep.
It is a very popular product. So I wonder, right? You don't have to be like a freaking detective to see like what happens here, where a very popular yep. product eventually gets yep. copied by Amazon. And there's kind of nothing to protect companies from this. But yeah, what is the Glow, real quick?
You just described it really well.
Yeah,
so
yeah. I mean, it's a thing for kids. It is a way for kids to chat with people, but also play games at the same time.
Yes, right.
Which is, it prevents the thing from like a kid just staring at a screen or not being very engaged with the video chat, which is the problem I have with my daughter sometimes.
Aww.
Like, I video chat my parents all the time so they can talk with her, but, you know, she doesn't want to do that. But if she can play a game remotely with her grandparents or something, like, that could be cool. And if it could be an educational game, even better.
Yeah.
That is the essential idea here. Yeah.
If they could take turns and play the same game, yes. But I kind of saw it as, like, the person on the call watches on as your kid is playing. I'm like, how engaging is that? But no, if they're taking turns, they're actively playing together. I could see that being interesting. To the point though about what Amazon does, right? It's I mean, we've seen peak designs go ham on calling out Amazon for ripping off the design of its popular bags and selling them for much cheaper with poorer materials or you know what the peak design is claiming. There's that, and that's what Amazon seems to be doing here with the Osmo. Actually, sorry, my bad. The Glow. which is very similar to the Osmo. Also very similar to HP's Sprout 3D printer type of all-in-one with a similar swivel camera attachment at the top that can see what you're doing on the surface in front of it. But the other thing that reminded me, too, when you were talking about Amazon harvesting data, is that like with the ban, like going backwards a little bit, one of the things that Fitbit always says about its new features is like, people are always like, oh, so how did you come up with this feature? They're always like, with all this insight that we have from the Fitbits all over the place. So don't tell me that like they're not using your data. But at least with Fitbit, I don't know what else they're doing with your data, but at least with Fitbit, so far what we know is they've taken the data and studied people's habits to come up with like ideas for future innovations, future things that they could do better differently. And that's led them to things like whatever fitness guides they have under the premium plan, whatever ECG, EEG, skin temperature variation. They keep saying that this is more stuff they, you know, people want. And then adding more sensors onto a thing helps them collect more data, whatever. But with the Halo View, like Amazon's collecting similar data, and Amazon doesn't need to be innovating in the health space, not really. Like, they're straight ripping off other people. So what's that data going to be used for? To, like, tell you, hey, your blood sugar is low, maybe buy some sugar-free donuts?
They can. They can certainly.
On Amazon, you know what I mean?
It's a cross-section of data. Like, Amazon is this big Borg of a company that can do all sorts of stuff and then recommend, hey, watch this fitness show. You know, like, do this other stuff. Buy this exercise bike while you're binging Amazon Prime Video. They could do anything. It is funny that Microsoft used to get a lot of flack in the 90s for basically scooping up smaller companies, you know, and just kind of absorbing them. At least they bought the companies. At least they bought their IP. Whereas now you could just be like, a nice thing you got there.
Let me make it.
Let me make it. And I know exactly who's making it for you. It's not that hard for me to go find the same OEMs to build
white label.
It.
Yep.
Yeah. It's all something. So, hey, let us know what you guys think about the Amazon robot and kind of the way they position their products. I am just highly skeptical at this point.
I just want to point out very quickly, this is a only slightly related observation, which is that it's funny, like Amazon's naming standards are interesting. Other than their Ring and Blink products, everything rhymes with O. Echo, Astro, Glow, Halo.
Sure.
Like, oh my gosh.
What does that mean?
Other than the Kindle. The Kindle. I made that work. But there's a couple points that people are bringing up in our live chat too, which, by the way, you can join us. Like the Vindra said, on to talk to us. But Ryan Watson also points out that, you know, all of this is just extra waste. It's all plastic ending up in the landfill.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly, that's part of the, and like Amazon did kick off its event talking about all the sustainability efforts. And, you know, they came under a lot of criticism for the carbon footprint of all the packages they send over and over like so many times on different days.
It's the only company that has to like be like slowing down the stuff
it's
optimized, like
slow
down deliveries and call that a feature and then call that sustainability. Oh, it's kind of hilarious. Yeah.
Oh, it is really hilarious. And then there was, you know, they also, by the way, teamed up with Disney and said like, you can now say, hey, Disney, instead of, you know, Alexa.
Yeah.
And
in hotel rooms, right? Yeah.
You know what's funny though? It's like, I believe this is the case, and when I was checking out, but I believe that Alexa's, Amazon's the only one that lets you change the wake word for your assistant, which means you could already have said, hey, Disney, to Alexa.
Can you make it any word? I thought it was like, hey, computer is the only thing, but I have not played around with that in a while.
I haven't played around with it too much too, but it looked like it was pretty customizable. I'll have to look into it, but
okay.
I don't think this is like a groundbreaking feature, but talking about Amazon's voice assistant too, another person on the chat, Jimmy Chong, brought up that like, Amazon still doesn't support a lot of languages, right, for their voice assistant. And that's something where it's behind, right, where they actually, in my mind, pioneered this voice assistant technology, at least with smart home products. So why are they so behind when it comes to this?
Siri, does like Google's voice stuff, does it work better in China and other countries?
I know that I definitely know Siri works in Chinese and Cantonese because I had my parents set up their phones to use Siri in Cantonese. Mm-hmm. It was funny as hell. Siri has sass in Cantonese.
Oh boy. Siri's also just not good in English. So, okay.
No, not at all. But she's just funny in Cantonese. I don't think she works very well, but, you know, she understands. And then I think Google Assistant is supported in quite a few languages, but I'm not entirely sure if it's like Chinese and Cantonese just yet. Let me look that up really quick.
Yeah. While we're talking about this, like the key that Amazon had, like when they announced the first Echo and they were working on all this voice tech, everybody else, like Siri actually existed before, Google's voice stuff existed before the Echo.
Yeah.
Everybody else was trying multiple languages. And Amazon was just like, okay, just English. You know, let's just do this and focus on this basically for the US. And they didn't even really release the Echo in other countries for a while. And by doing that, you can build a voice model that's very like specific to one language. That's why they released it in beta testing, basically to Prime subscribers. And when Prime people first got those Echoes, it wasn't very good. It wasn't very accurate. Yeah. But like a year later or 6 months later, by the time I wrote a piece about the very first Echo, because they didn't send it out for review, by the time they were sending it out, it was a lot better. Because all those early users had tested, had trained the voice model. So I don't know.
I remember those,
Yeah. Are they going to do something similar for other languages? I don't even know, like, necessarily how big Amazon is in China, where you already have, like, a lot of other e-commerce giants, too, right? So it's like, maybe they don't even have the same amount of play.
They do, yeah. Huawei, I know a lot of little, like, A lot of the tech companies in China have their own versions. So I think Xiaomi's is Xiaoi and Huawei's was something else. I can't remember what Huawei's was, but they've all built in their little voice assistants. Alibaba has their own as well. Tmall has the Genie, I think. Man, I'm not super up to speed, but I believe I've heard at least some of these. Updating you guys, by the way, the Google Assistant is available in various Chinese languages, but not the new Google Assistant on specific devices. So like the one that is faster, that does a lot more things, they're still like, I think, rolling that out to other languages or updating. And also depending on what type of device apparently that I use. So we'll see. I tried to add Chinese and they're like, are you sure you want to do this?
Voice is important, and every company is going to be focusing on this. But here's the thing about voice interactions. If you get it wrong once, it's like 100 times more frustrating than if you like click a button and like something goes wrong on your computer. Like it's sort of like trying to explain something to somebody and they just don't get it. And on a personal level, you're just like, you get frustrated. You're like, ah.
The number of times I've yelled at my poor speakers that don't deserve it, it's pretty bad.
That's it. So voice interactions kind of have to be a certain level of perfect before they're usable. Can be like the Star Trek computer where you're just like asking something aloud and it gets, you know, answered really quickly. And then sometimes it could just be a nightmare. And that I often encounter
too many times. Yeah, I get very frustrated. I will not tell y'all what about, I guess.
All right, we'll be keeping an eye on all these Amazon products. I don't know if I would test the Astro Robot. Maybe just for like educational purposes, I'd bring it in because my daughter's already... She is like a good little soldier for the robot wars. Like, she is ready to fight them all. She was terrified of Roombas from the beginning. She's both fascinated by them, but also is like, why is that robot moving? Why is that robot talking? You know, like, that's not right. So she is very suspicious of them, too. And we're going to raise a whole generation of robot fighters, and we're probably going to need them, too. Let's move on to some other news, and it is also a Google-filled week, maybe not as much as Amazon and some of the other companies, but what is up with Google, Sherlyn? Like, there's a lot of map stuff and search stuff happening. Yeah.
Hells yeah. This week, Google also had a small event, not really one of those big ones that everybody gets real hype about, but it's so far annual Search On event starting since last year, where it typically unveils new stuff coming to search. And maps, actually. So, but one of the biggest things that was sort of announced in the middle of this event is that Google is adding the lens feature to desktop Chrome. Lens, by the way, is the feature where you can like look up a photo and like see what's inside the picture and then like pull out details from it. Like a shirt that you saw on someone, you can lens it up and you can like look for it, or you can look up a landmark. But the other thing that Google introduced with Lens is that you can now add a text parameter to your lens searches. So for example, if I saw your headphones, or your glasses, for example, Devendra, and I took a photo and I was like, okay, what brand is it? And then I can add a text search and say, well, this, but, in sunglasses, or this, but whatever. Like, you can say, the example they gave was better, where like they saw a print on someone's shirt and took a photo of it and then looked it up, but then said this but socks or this but a blanket, you know, that sort of thing. And then you can also do that with like vehicle parts. So they had a bicycle on demo and they, you know, took a picture of a, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of this, but like a derailleur, something like that. It's like a gear, like a wheel part or something. And yes, thank you. They said derailleur. And then one of our team members said it was the wrong pronunciation. So I was like, all right, great. You can look at the, so you can use Lens to look up a part name, but you can also then search how to fix this part. So you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to start another search and being like, how to fix derailleurs, and then figure out how to spell it even. So that's a nice, I think, Lens update, and it definitely is helping you, like make better searches. Like if you need more context to a search, right, you have the room for it now. The other things that Google introduced were a new wildfire tracking feature in Maps, which is, Carissa on our team said, it's okay, sad sure. that this is a feature now. Like
we need
situation
it.
Is so bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
That you need it now. That's how bad it is. But there you go. Google also wanted to help you understand the sources of information you're looking at. So it's expanding its existing about this result feature. And it'll show you more context and more information around sources. But also, if you want to learn more about a new topic, for example, you can, they have like ways for you. So when you start a new topic, let's say knitting, you can expand out. You can first know the basics and then you can expand out with broaden the search or narrow the search, that sort of thing. And then you get all sorts of other related information and all that fun stuff, I guess. And then finally, the thing that interested me the most is the Address Maker app that Google made to basically help governments and, you know, nonprofits mass generate these plus right. codes.
I thought you said Dressmaker app, which where oh. I was like, why is Google getting into fashion?
I know. I heard you laugh a little bit. I was like, wait, why? But no. If they made Dressmaker apps, I'd be like, hell's yeah. But no, this is Address Maker. Mm-hmm.
However you guys say it.
Yeah, Address Maker. So plus codes actually have been around since 2015, they're a set of like between 6 and 8 or something numbers and characters and letters. So something like a PJ25 plus 2 something, right? Like that sort of thing, like a postal code. But it ties to like a set of Latin long coordinates so that you can basically add a plus code to any area, right? You know how zip codes and postal codes work? Your postal system has to recognize it. And not every country, not every region in the world has a sophisticated system. And it sucks when you don't have an address, you can't get deliveries, you can't apply for a job, you can't vote, you can't sign up for a lot of things. So with a plus code, you know, the idea is that you should be able to. It's an open source and free system. But, you know, it's been in the past really hard to assign these at scale. If you're in a government, you know, you want to help your country or your area or your local neighborhood get addresses, plus codes can help. And now it used to take, years? And now it just takes weeks with Address Maker.
That's really cool. That's actually something that could help a lot of people. I mean, it helps Google too, because it gives like more data to like tie people to. But hey, I'm from a small country in South America. And like last time I had to go visit family, right? It is a 3-hour drive into the middle of nowhere. Nobody has addresses. Like it is, it is rough. So I could see something like this being super useful. Yeah.
Yes, the example they talked about on the at their event was how like out in a very like far-flung place, someone was like, oh, we give directions here by saying, you know, that big rock, turn right and then go for, like, I guess this many miles, and like, and then make a left at the tree. It's like, no, if you have a plus code, Google Maps will read them. So yes, for sure, this is a way to get more people on Google Maps. But also, it's not just for people who are in rural areas. If you've, like, in my past job, I had to, like, make sure deliveries got to the right, like, factory in China. And, like, I'm sorry, but industrial gardens and industrial parks in different parts of the world have very, very bad, like, address systems. I don't even, number 2, Xinyi District, block 482, and then, like, a set of numbers next to each other, and then a road name. And I'm just like, what is going on here? Even for people who live in cities who with established systems can benefit, I think, in general from this system, where if, like, we had a unified address system all around the world, like, I don't understand London's SQ1, SW2 thing. Like, it's just internationally.
I don't understand addresses too. In a lot of places. Like, people in New York, like, just reading Queens addresses trip me up all the time, because they're like, number dash something on number street. And it's really, if you get one of those things wrong, it sends you to a whole different corner of Queens. So
my favorite is how I always take a risk when I'm going to our video producer Brian O's place, because he lives on, let's say, Smith Avenue. For some reason in my head I always put Smith Place, so I'm just like,
You're just bad at this. I think that's it.
I am. This is going to help people like me. If you just need to remember a few, like, just need to scan a code, that will work. Yeah. Anyway, that I thought stood out as a truly potentially helpful feature for people who need it. That was basically it that Google announced at their event. Not the biggest, not the flashiest, but
there's actually one thing worth mentioning here too, because after Amazon's event, Google's like, everyone's like, so Google, where are your video, like, another video doorbell? Because Amazon just announced like a $50 they announced a $50 one. They announced like cheaper hardware all around and cheaper thermostat. So Google published a blog post and was like, hey guys, don't worry, we have another Nest doorbell coming next year. Wired one, a new wired one that's going to support 24/7 video recording. So that's something, but it also shows, like, man, you would think a big company like Google would be able to, like, prep and respond and, like, assume Amazon is going to start talking about this stuff and you should probably be ready to, like, respond somehow. It looks like it looks like a blog post they wrote during lunch. They're like, I don't know. New one coming next year, guys. Don't worry about it. Just sit tight.
I read the same blog post. It's Rishi Chandra, the head of Nest. And he's a really, actually, like, I've interviewed him a couple times. Sure. He's a nice person, seems like, anyway, right to me. And I could see, like, I like that they're pretty transparent about it. At least they didn't have to say it. They didn't have to come out and say it. They actually, they're in that post to acknowledge that they've made some people pretty frustrated with their move to the Home app and all that stuff. And to be fair, I think this was also in part in response to the slate of new Nest products they announced in August, which were like, battery-powered video doorbell, which is everything, cool, but...
Let me just say, everything they're doing is years late compared to Arlo, compared to Ring, and I think that is the... It's just like a constant, like, comedy of errors. Like, oh my God. They did it again. Amazon's way ahead of us, so we gotta, like, we gotta tell people we have this coming.
I think Amazon borrowed this floodlight idea from them, though. I'm not sure if who came first.
Well, I think Arlo came first. So Arlo formerly part of Netgear. I'm on the Arlo camera system.
Arlo's typically pretty good. Yeah,
their stuff is really good. Google also says, "Hey, folks, don't worry. You're gonna have a web interface for the Google Home app to manage your web, like your live streaming device, cameras, on the web next year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Google.
It's something Ring and Arlo have had. Okay. Oh, no. A very basic feature. The most basic feature in the world that Ring and Arlo have had for years. So when I say I don't trust Google and the smart home folks, it's stuff like this. It's just like, I don't know what's happening on your end. Yeah. I do have I have the most basic Nest thermostat, and even that has been, like, kind of a nightmare at times. Aww. So, yeah, these companies, smart home stuff is very annoying and very weird. Don't get locked into one company, folks, because, like, you're going to be beholden to them forever. Let's move on to some news from Facebook, which dropped last night, actually, and after we had started planning this episode. But it's worth mentioning, Carissa Bell at Engadget writes about Facebook publishing slides on how Instagram affects teen mental health. This is like some of the source material that the Wall Street Journal posts that we were talking about last week or the week before. This is some of that information getting out there. But Facebook couldn't just release that. They had to like annotate the slide. So you have the slide on one side and like this pile of Facebook notes being like, the research is not saying what we're saying. Like, don't worry about it. Don't read too much into this, which is it is kind of funny because it's sort of like Facebook saying, our actual research scientists who are paid to do this, don't actually listen to them. They're a little wrong. They're kind of like, basically dissing their own researchers for doing their jobs. It is very weird because that's what Facebook does. It's just hilarious. And so far, by the way, like the controversy around all this and the WSJ reports has pushed the company to pause their proposed Instagram for kids. Thank God. Facebook is scheduled to testify later today at a Senate hearing about all these reports. So we'll be interested to see like what happens there. There's a lot. Have you seen the stuff, Sherlyn?
What stuff? Specifically the slides?
Yeah, the slides or any of this?
I haven't looked at the slides, but I will say I have thought long and hard about how Instagram affects our mental health, not just teens, everyone. And I mean, this has been a long debated topic. I think everyone is on some level aware that it's not very healthy to be like, you know, coveting what people have on social media or comparing yourselves. Everyone knows. And there's been movements, multiple movements. Instagram, I think, like led first on Instagram by influencers going like, oh, you know, Instagram versus reality is a subreddit that I follow. And it's like what people look like on Instagram versus what they look like in real life is just so different and drastic. This account that I follow, I can't remember her full name offhand, but you know, a swole woman who recently got laid off at, I think, Vice.
I think Casey Johnson at Vice, right?
Thank you, Casey. Yes, thank you. She published on, on her own channel or medium that like Instagram is just like an app to make people feel bad about themselves. And then their algorithm just keeps reiterating that because like it's the way, I mean, like I honestly almost look, if you look at it agnostically without thinking of like the effect it's having on people, the search algorithm works the way it's meant to, right? If you look for something, it'll keep humbling you with related results. So if you looked up candles, you keep getting candles and candle holders and whatnot. But then what happens is that, and this is how it affects diet culture, is that like the second you look for like one healthy eating tip, or you just look at one, or you engage with one, you just keep getting these pictures of super fit people, or like, you know, and then it keeps reminding you that something is off with you, so that you have to buy this product or buy into a lifestyle.
It reinforces this thing. Yeah. What's funny is that it's not like Facebook started out like the goal wasn't to make people feel bad about themselves, right?
Right.
The goal was to make people want to keep coming back to Instagram. And by pursuing that goal and not thinking about the like unintended consequences, this is kind of where we're at. There's one thing I want to read because it's an annotation I saw on several slides. So like one slide says, 1 in 5 teens say that Instagram makes them feel worse about themselves, with UK girls saying it's the most negatives. The annotation is, this research was not intended to and does not evaluate causal claims between Instagram and health or well-being. And they just repeat that over and over again, even though that is the entire point of the research, so like, is to see it's how like, it's actually affecting
fault.
People.
No, not my fault. That's not
us. I am more and more angry about Facebook, and every time we talk about it and like their impact on the world and their inability to like handle it is incredibly, incredibly annoying. Anyway, so the Wall Street Journal has released more slides from the whistleblower. So there is actually like a straight up whistleblower within Facebook who's been pushing this stuff out. I believe Congress is also trying to get in touch with that person, like to actually see more of what's happening here. Yeah.
Is this the one where they had like thousands of pages of things to share? Because I remember seeing something on Twitter fairly recently about that, but I didn't click through because my brain was burned. But no, there's been a lot of coverage. I will say though, Facebook, look, instead of saying no causal effect, don't blame us. Instead of saying that, you can admit that like it might not be us, but things are starting to show people seem to think that this is having an effect. Yeah. Why don't we look into it? Why don't we like fess up. Why don't we just say like, hey, even if it's not our fault, like our intended result, maybe there is something we're doing here that's a byproduct, and we should look to mitigate that. We should try to create a positive
experience. I care more about
experience.
Results and action, right? So it's like, I don't care if you didn't intend to do this, but you have built this monster of a system that is doing this. So acknowledge it so we can move forward. Otherwise, we will never kind of move forward as a society. One thing I want to add here, our podcast producer Ben is noting like these annotations seem similar to like how oil companies talked about climate change. I was reminded of like how cigarette companies talked about like the effects of tobacco, you know, and
plastics companies telling you to go recycle. Come on.
Well, that is something people still have to learn, because that was so insidious. Like that was actually a true genius move. Where they were like, people will just stop talking about this. Let's just give them, let's put the onus on them. Let's put the onus on the consumer so that they feel bad about buying plastic, so that they do this work to handle plastic. And then the big petroleum companies can kind of keep doing whatever they want. So that's going to be a whole other discussion, folks. And I am I'm also very angry about that, too. So
yes,
a lot to be angry about in this world. But let's move on to less contentious news. Valentina, you want to bring up Valentina's Fitbit Charge 5 review, Sherlyn? Like any big takeaways from that?
So we talked with Valentina, I believe it was last week or the week before. And yes, so she had been working on Charge 5 review. The funny thing is just that like we had to wait for some features to come live before we wanted to publish this too. And basically from what I can tell, it's largely the same, just a slightly new look, and that screen is bigger. So if you've been looking for a basic fitness band and, you know, with a larger screen,
It has GPS,
Charge
5.
It's a pretty
which
good
is
one.
Nice.
It has onboard. Yep, exactly. Since the Charge 4, Charge 4 is when it really got the GPS boost, but then this one has the GPS and the screen. It's starting to look a little Gear Fit like, though, in my in my opinion, which is, if y'all recall, Samsung's like curved screen fitness band from a while ago. So, you know, that RIP to that, I guess.
RIP
but here
to
you
that.
Go. It's
remember
revived,
the whole fitness
of.
Band craze in the early 2010s, and everybody was trying to jump on it. But yeah, but all of us in Valentina were like, the Jawbone Up. I do miss the Jawbone Up. That was a cool thing that often didn't work and basically killed that company. But it was fun while it lasted. Let's round up, turn things down here with a fun story. guess who is Mario? Or Mario?
It's-a me!
Who's Mario? Yeah.
It's-a me.
I also keep saying Mario because I grew up saying Mario, and then all of a sudden in the 64 era, the official pronunciation became Mario. So now that's all an entire generation has grown up with. There was life before that, folks. Who do you think it is, Sherlyn? Who would you like to see?
I mean,
Mario?
Know who would I like to see? Someone who what's that word? Not accurately, someone who authentically represents the character. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Danny DeVito?
Sure, yeah.
That would be actually my dream, like, indie drama version of the Mario Brothers movie would be Danny DeVito and, like, John Turturro as Luigi.
That would be pretty cool.
And it would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Chris Pratt is Mario. The worst Chris. Chris Pratt, Star-Lord himself. And it was really funny to see the internet just kind of, like, It was a Nintendo Direct where this announcement happened. Shigeru Miyamoto popped up. We're like, oh, Miyamoto's here. Something big is happening. And then we were all waiting, like, new game? New Mario RPG or something? He's like, no, there's a movie happening. And it stars Chris Pratt. And it's sort of like you could feel a disturbance in the geek force. Like, everyone's like, oh, man. Oh, no.
Aww.
And no offense to Chris Pratt, but it's just a lot of things. Like,
I think he's fine.
But he's a little overplayed. And I think it's only like
kind of like how I feel about Awkwafina. Yeah.
His only good role, though, like Awkwafina is a good actor. She can do many things. He can do kind of like one thing. And his good thing is Star-Lord. Like Guardians, his like vibe, his comedic sensibilities was perfect. And then he was in a lot of bad action movies.
Jurassic Park.
The Jurassic World, the first one. Awful. Just got awful. And he didn't have much to work with, but he was not great in it. He was in The Tomorrow War, which, again, I think was not a great movie. So
I liked it.
People were people had a lot of things to say about Chris Pratt, but what's funny is that the rest of the cast in this movie is actually pretty good. Anya Taylor-Joy, who I love, she is Peach. Charlie Day from It's Always Sunny is Luigi, which we're going to get some like nice chaotic Luigi energy there.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing, yeah.
That's going to be fun. Jack Black is Bowser. Keegan-Michael Key is Toad. Seth Rogen is Donkey Kong. Fred Armisen is Cranky Kong, which in the mythology of Donkey Kongs, he is the original Kong. He's the one from the original game, so it's kind of funny. There's going to be a cameo from Charles Martinet, the video game voice of Mario, the It's-a-Me voice. So I actually don't hate the rest of this cast. I think this could be really cool. It sounds like this is going to be an all CG movie. They're aiming for...
Oh, so their voice?
Yep. These are all just going to be voices. They're aiming for a 2022 holiday release, December 21st in the US or North America specifically. I actually don't hate this. I would actually like to see what this cast does, but I am not looking forward to seeing Chris Pratt as Mario. That's just me. But you could choose.
At least it's voice only, I guess. I mean, you know,
it's voice only. He's very good with voice. I think the Lego movie, he stars in the Lego movie. He's very good there. Like he's a funny, he's a funny guy. It's just, it is funny how quickly the internet turned on him when somebody was like, choose the bet, you have to lose one Chris. And everybody was immediately.
I remember that. And then, Mark Ruffalo had to defend him or something.
I think he felt bad. Like, either he publicly said something, and then the rest of the MCU cast was like, no, he's not the worst Chris. Which, I don't know. It was very funny, very hilarious. I'm not, dissing him personally. It's just not my favorite Chris, but he will be Mario. It's coming out next year. So we're looking forward to that. Let's move on to what we've been working on, and I want to shout out a couple of things. I spent, it's kind of like your iPhone week, Sherlyn. Like, I am juggling, three separate reviews right now. I just published my review of the Sonos Beam Gen 2 this morning, so you can read that on Engadget. It is basically the same as the original Beam, but it has, Dolby Atmos processing, which is weird to me because it actually has the same exact speaker drivers as the first Beam. So they basically are using a more powerful CPU to kind of direct where some of that sound is going. And it doesn't have upward firing speakers like most Atmos soundbars do. So you don't get that sound that bounces off your ceiling and feels like it's filling up your room. You don't get that, but you actually do get some sort of cool height features too. So if you have a small room and you just want to upgrade your sound real quick, it's going to be a good option. I really dug it. It sounds pretty good, but it's $450. Which is definitely on the high end for small compact soundbars. You could get Vizios for $200 and under. That will sound pretty good too. And the big takeaway is if you're in that price range and you want a real Atmos sound, there are Vizio systems that cost $500 that will give you a nice big soundbar, a subwoofer that's wireless, and two rear speakers that are wireless. So there are a lot of options in that price range. I just think some people just want one box that doesn't take up too much room. They don't want to have rear speakers. So for them, this is going to be a pretty good speaker. I know you're thinking about it, Sherlyn. So if you're thinking this is actually a pretty good one, but I don't know the amount of space you're working with. And I don't know if you even need all of this. So, we'll see. We'll talk about it. Next week is the launch of Windows 11. So I am in the midst of reviewing that. Somehow, maybe we'll hear more about other devices running Windows 11 next week. I do not foresee this being as big as my Windows 10 review, because I reviewed that when that thing launched, and that was it took a while. I spent weeks writing that review. This one, it feels more of a service pack, almost like a slight tweak. Yeah.
Seems so much different.
Other than the interface changes, that's it. It's a slight difference. But beyond that, it still looks and functions. It still functions just like Windows 10. So that is kind of what I am wrestling with right now. But keep an eye out for that next week. Sherlyn, what are you working on?
I there's too much stuff I can't say, but people know there's things going on next week, and I am free writing pretty much everything, right? there's iOS 15 that I'm still waiting on some features to drop before we publish our review, because I think one of the greatest things about iOS 15 would be SharePlay via FaceTime. So we're waiting for that to be available and stable before we publish our review. And then there's a bunch of events next week that I'm not entirely sure I can talk about. So there's that. So look out next week, as I'm going to say.
Yeah, let's move on to our pop culture picks. I'm really interested in what you've picked this week.
This week, Devendra, you're going to love and hate both of the things that I talk about.
I'm ready. I'm fully ready. Yeah.
Yes. So I had to dig into my archives for this first one. I haven't seen a lot recently. I've just been like binge watching old stuff. Mm-hmm. And so a while back, maybe a few weeks or 2 months ago, I saw Sorry to Bother You. Have you seen this one, Devendra?
Yeah,
do you love it?
It's fantastic.
It's pretty awesome. So I think if you haven't seen it, Sorry to Bother You is a really great, strange science fiction film that ends really wild. It goes pretty crazy.
I wouldn't even say
end.
Science fiction. Like nobody knew that's where that movie would be going. It just looked like a fun comedy. Yeah.
I know, but I mostly, I mean, there's parts of it that the way his job is sort of portrayed as like jumping into people's houses. He's a telemarketer. And but that part of it was a little sci-fi. It's not that like, it's just a portrayal of what he does, right? A call can be as intrusive as just popping into someone's house and Sorry to Bother You. But I only got hooked into it because like it had the potential of being science fiction-y too. I mean, but it is really freaking fun. I enjoyed the storytelling of it. Tessa
Thompson.
That
was a fun movie
to
see in theaters. Like once things go where they go, that was everybody was bawling.
Yeah.
That. Yeah.
It's on Hulu. That's where I watched it. The other thing this second one that I'm gonna talk about is not so much a recommendation as it is just a fun, brainless thing to do if you have time on your hands and are feeling nostalgic. Devendra, I saw Mars Attack over the weekend again.
Hey, I wouldn't say brainless. Mars Attack. That's a fun movie.
It's very fun. It's very camp. It's kind of ridiculous. I last saw it when I was a child, and I was like, wait, this movie is pretty crap. Like, it's Tim Burton. It's very like it's got a style to it, and it's ridiculous. I when I say bad too, I partly mean the special effects are pretty bad.
They're I think purposefully cheesy. Yeah.
So I mean, I have no clue for the like. When I watched it as a kid, I was like, this is great. And there's the cast list is amazing. There's like Michael J. Fox, I believe, Sarah Jessica Parker. Pierce Brosnan looking fine as
hell. Everyone's in it. Jack Nicholson. Everyone's in that movie. Yeah.
Every freaking one is in it. So anyhow, Mars Attacks is a good like throwback film if you're feeling a little nostalgic this weekend. Okay, but
nostalgic for 1999. Yeah.
Come on.
It's been 20 years, man. Yeah.
It's been so long. I was alive then. Can you imagine that? Anyway. Devendra, there is another one I want to talk about, but I know it's something you were recommending.
Well, let me go straight to that. I've been watching Midnight Mass, the new Mike Flanagan show on Netflix. And hey, I love Mike Flanagan. I'll say this straight up. Like, he is the best horror director working today because everything he produces, no matter the shows, Haunting of Hill House or Bly Manor, or his movies like Dr. Sleep, which I adore. Like I'm just fully into everything he does. So I love this guy. Midnight Mass is a show about a small community who lives on an island, I think like off the coast of Massachusetts or something. And weird things start happening. They have a new priest and weird things start happening. And it's very much like a Stephen King novel of like small weird things and there may be something preying on the animals on the island and you know, things are happening. I will not spoil anything, but I love it so much. And
I think I am starting to recognize Mike Flanagan's style, which is very much like characters get a lot of like talking space and talking time to really
expose his characters.
Right, but also to expose these very like vulnerable moments where you don't necessarily see in real life. So there's a person who just, you know, has come out of prison and is trying to reconnect with the world. He explains how, you know, his world feels. There is, you know, a person who's coming to terms with trying to be sober, coming to terms with trying to like, there's just so many human stories that we don't get to see. There's the girl who like, you know, it's in a wheelchair and then it's like explaining some of that perspective too. And I found that's what really sucked me in. And that's very much Mike Flanagan's style, is these like very deep, like with Haunting of Hill House, he had like the girl who I don't want to spoil it, that the sister, the youngest sister, she had a big monologue moment too, and it was just beautiful. The way like the scenes and are told through the monologues of these characters is, to me, very, very mm-hmm. Mike Flanagan, actually very recognizable now.
He's a great writer, and I think, unlike other horror folks, like, he builds characters, right? He makes you want to care about these people, so when bad things start happening, you're like, oh, no, please not them. Also want to shout out to Zach Guilford, a.k.a. Matt Saracen from Friday Night Lights, who immediately, when I see him, because he is the first face you see on when the show begins, I really miss seeing him on TV, because he is such a fantastic actor, and he does a great job of always playing actors who are characters who just need a hug, like characters who are like, that's it. He's very good at that. So anyway, check out Midnight Mass. It is very good. Trigger warning for animal violence, because there is some of that. I know that like affected some people as they were watching it.
And
it is rough, but there's a lot of dark stuff in this. Yeah,
my trigger warning was how I didn't expect to be going to church in the middle of a show. I was like, I was reading along with the,
I mean, it's called Midnight Mass, so
I know, I was like, oh, I'm attending mass, okay, like I'm going to mass, okay, I'm about to get the Eucharist, okay, all right.
But quite a unique church that one is, so be sure to check that out. One other thing I want to mention, I got to see one of the first screenings of No Time to Die, the latest James Bond movie, which has been delayed for like 2 freaking years. I have been just like so desperate to see this thing. So they did a really cool thing where they basically did critic screenings synchronized across the world at the same time as the London premiere. So I was able to like watch this at the same time as my podcast co-host in Seattle. And my other co-host in Colorado, and they like did the screenings at the exact same time all across them. So that was kind of wild. This movie, I really love the Daniel Craig. I love a couple of them. Like he's had like a messy run as Bond. Casino Royale, one of the best action movies of the last 20 years, followed by Quantum Solace, a horrible movie that was affected by the script. The writer's strike, so it really had no script. And then I loved Skyfall, which was this almost like a gorgeous, like artistic take on Bond, and that was followed up by Spectre, which was kind of trash, and I hate it. This movie is very long; it's nearly 3 hours long. There's a lot of action, but there's also like a lot of melodrama in here, which I don't think a lot of people will expect. But it really worked for me. I love Daniel Craig as this character, and I think it reckons with a lot of like what is not great about James Bond, the franchise and the character too. And hopefully like it'll be able to evolve even more like in future movies. But this is Daniel Craig's last Bond. I think it's a fitting send off, and it is definitely worth seeing in theaters if you can do it safely. That's the other thing. Like, it is really hard to like make time for these big theater movies, especially when it's 2 hours and 45 minutes long. It's very long. But I think it's really worth it. Shout out to Cary Joji Fukunaga, he is one of my favorite directors working today. He's worked on True Detective. He's made some incredible films, and like he just gives a really good perspective and has a great eye when it comes to action and doing this too. So, hey, No Time to Die is good. It's probably going to be the most divisive of the Daniel Craig Bonds. So I'm really interested in that conversation too. Because some of my critic friends don't like it at all. So it's very like down the middle. But I'm a big fan. So be sure to keep an eye out for it when it's out.
Well, that's it for our episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. Our podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, and at the Filmcast podcast at thefilmcast.com.
If you want to send me the funny things that Siri says to you in Cantonese, I'm at Sherlyn Lowe on Twitter. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify.
We'd like to take a second to thank our sponsor, Mouser Electronics. Not only does Mouser stock the world's widest selection of semiconductors and electronic components, they also offer an original content series called Empowering Innovation Together. Each month, EIT takes a deep dive into the hottest tech trends, and this month the focus is on intelligent transportation systems. Check out podcasts, articles, infographics, videos, and more at mouser.com/empowering-innovation.